This program is provided by lawyer Kyung-jin Kim.
Imagine you're building the most advanced towering skyscraper the world has ever seen.
Okay.
You have the blueprints, you know, you've got the Capitol all lined up.
Right.
But right as you're pouring the foundation for the highest floors, the government suddenly steps in and freezes your construction permits.
Oh, wow. That's not ideal.
No, it's a disaster. And while you're sitting there waiting, your elite-led architects suddenly defect to the firm building a tower right across the street.
Of course they do.
And just to make it a perfect storm, a judge hands you a $1 billion bill because you allegedly used, like, someone else's copyrighted materials to train your drafting software.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an absolute nightmare for a project manager.
Mm.
But, you know, it isn't a hypothetical skyscraper. That is exactly what happened to the artificial intelligence industry this exact week. In late June 2026.
Exactly. We are looking at a massive stack of global intelligence briefings, legal filings, and major tech releases that have all just collided over the last few days.
Yeah, it's been a busy week.
Very. And if you are listening right now, our mission today is to unpack this incredible interception of geopolitics, massive capital, and just sheer human brain power that is currently reshaping the AI landscape.
And while the headlines this week might seem totally disconnected on the surface, I mean, you've got a new supercomputer coming online in China, a massive copyright settlement in the U.S., an exodus of Nobel-level talent from Google.
Right.
They're actually deeply intertwined threads. This is, you know, a single story about the battle for the infrastructure of the future.
We want you to walk away from this deep dive, not just knowing what happened, but exactly why it matters for your work, your investments, and, you know, your daily life, because the ground is shifting incredibly fast.
Extremely fast.
Let's start with the literal foundation of that skyscraper, right? The physical hardware, because before we look at the software models fighting for dominance, we really have to look at the massive shift that just occurred with the machines they actually run on.
All right, it's a seismic shift. Yeah. So on June 23rd, at the International Supercomputing Conference in Hamburg, it was announced that China's Lianchang supercomputer has reclaimed the number one spot on the TOP 500 list.
Guess huge.
It's massive. To give you some historical context, this is China's first time holding that top spot in 9 years.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because the specs on this machine are just staggering. It hit 2.198 exaflops.
Yeah.
And just to put that into perspective for you, an exaflop is a quintillion calculations per second.
Which is a number most of us can't even visualize.
Right. I mean, if every person on Earth did one math problem every single second, it would still take over 4 years to do what this machine does in 1 second.
Exactly.
But here is the crazy part. It achieved that without a single NVIDIA or AMD GPU inside of it.
None. Zero.
It runs exclusively on Chinese-made CPUs, specifically the Huawei HiSilicon LX2, and it is packing 13.79 million cores.
Yeah, it's an incredible density.
Wait, I have to stop right there. AI training requires immense parallel processing, which is like exactly why everyone uses NVIDIA GPUs in the first place. If they don't have those, how are standard CPUs achieving exaflop speeds?
Well, it's a profound engineering achievement born out of pure necessity. Because they couldn't acquire the GPUs, they linked millions of these standard CPUs using a proprietary interconnect called Linky.
Okay.
Imagine taking a million separate, slightly weaker calculators and getting them to talk to each other so perfectly synchronized that they act like one massive superbrain.
That sounds incredibly difficult to coordinate.
It is. And it's all running on a domestic Linux-derived operating system called Kylin.
It makes me think about this analogy. Competing in the AI hardware space under the current U.S. export controls is exactly like squeezing a long balloon.
Oh, I like that.
Right. The United States tightly gripped one end. They blocked the export of advanced GPUs to starve China of compute. But the pressure didn't disappear. It just squeezed all that Chinese capital and engineering focus to the other end of the balloon, forcing them to innovate and scale up their own domestic CPUs to an unprecedented level.
What's fascinating here is the technical nuance of how that pressure actually materialized.
Oh.
Because the sources point out a really crucial caveat.
What's that?
Yes, Lianchang absolutely dominates traditional high-performance computing, which relies on extremely precise 64-bit calculations, the kind of math you use for, like, nuclear physics or weather simulations.
Okay.
But AI training is different. AI doesn't need to be perfectly accurate to 64 decimal places. It just needs to be incredibly fast at guessing. We call this mixed precision math.
Okay, so how did Langshine do on the mixed precision benchmarks?
It only ranked fourth.
Ah.
Yeah, it is still lagging behind three American GPU-based systems. So if we look at this impartially, the export controls arguably work for their intended purpose.
They did slow down the AI training.
Exactly. They slowed down China's state-of-the-art AI training capabilities. But the unintended blowback was that it accidentally stimulated massive historic leaps in China's traditional computing architecture.
But here's where the story takes a turn. If China is innovating out of necessity because of an American hardware block, the U.S. government is currently creating a very different kind of bottleneck for its own domestic software.
Yes, they are.
Today marks day 14 of the U.S. government's export control block on Anthropic's Fable 5 model.
And the internal corporate response to this freeze has been incredibly telling. Anthropic just swapped out its lead negotiator.
Right. CEO Dario Amodei stepped back.
He stepped back from the talks. Instead, Tom Brown, who famously designed OpenAI's GPT-3 before moving over, is stepping in alongside their policy head, Sarah Heck, to negotiate directly with the Commerce Department.
Switching out a traditional CEO for an elite technical architect sends a very clear message.
It really does.
They aren't preparing for a standard policy debate. They are preparing for a highly technical negotiation about model weights.
Which is the core of the issue.
Right. Which, if you're unfamiliar, isn't about traditional software bugs. Model weights are the billions of tiny mathematical connections the AI learned during training. It's the actual, quote-unquote, brain of the system.
Exactly. And the clock is ticking loudly today. Lawmakers are furious.
Yeah.
Today is the absolute deadline for the Commerce Department to answer a bipartisan letter led by Representative Liccardo. They've essentially set a ticking clock for the Commerce Department, using a mechanism called an is-informed letter under the Export Control Reform Act.
Basically demanding to know the actual legal basis for freezing this software.
Exactly.
I'm struggling with the logic here, though. If the U.S. government's goal is to keep America ahead of the rest of the world in AI, why on earth would they force our absolute best model to sit on the bench for weeks on end?
It's a great question.
Are we just handing global developers an excuse to switch to alternative models?
You're touching on what analysts call the paradox of protectionism. And the dynamic is very clear in the source material. When a government implements a hard freeze to safeguard a domestic technological advantage, they inadvertently create a vacuum.
Oh, of course.
The lawmakers are asking, were Anthropic given a chance to fix this supposed vulnerability? And is this vulnerability unique to them? Because developers have guidelines.
Right.
If a developer in Berlin or Tokyo can't access Fable 5, they don't just stop coding.
Right. The briefings we are looking at note that Chinese models like GLM 5.2 are rapidly spreading among global developers purely because Fable 5 is locked up.
So by trying to protect the crown jewel of American AI, regulatory friction is actively fostering foreign competition.
Wow.
The market hates uncertainty, which is why polymarket odds of Fable 5 being restored to U.S. customers by the end of today have plummeted to 41%.
That's rough.
Though if you look at July, the odds jump back up to 75%.
But here's the catch. You can battle over hardware, and you can fight over software permits all day, but none of it matters without the human minds that actually build these systems.
Absolutely.
And right now, the talent pool is shifting in a way we haven't seen in the history of Silicon Valley.
The talent gravity whale. The human capital shift this week has been nothing short of historic. Over a period of just 6 days, Google DeepMind lost four of its most senior AI researchers to its direct rivals, Anthropic and OpenAI.
And we are not talking about middle management here.
No.
We are talking about John Jumper, a Nobel laureate and the mastermind behind AlphaFold. He went to Anthropic.
Yeah.
Jonas Adler, their AI coding lead, also went to Anthropic. And Noam Shazir, the co-leader of the entire Gemini project, just left for OpenAI. When this news hit, Alphabet's stock literally dropped on the open market.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this isn't about one company offering a slightly higher base salary than another. You have to look at the financial architecture of what is happening.
Right.
Anthropic is currently valued at $965 billion. OpenAI is actively preparing to go public. These are massive generational liquidity events.
I look at it this way. Google offering a higher salary to keep someone is like offering them more cash to lay bricks. It's great money, sure.
Yeah.
But OpenAI offering pre-IPO equity is like offering them a percentage of the toll booth on the only highway into the city.
That's a great way to put it.
It fundamentally changes the math of wealth generation. An upcoming IPO of that magnitude exerts an immense gravitational pull, sucking the brightest stars out of Google's orbit.
That's a perfect way to frame it. Google has virtually infinite money. They have the server farms. They have billions of daily users.
Right.
But a massive tech salary can't compete with equity in a pre-IPO company poised to dominate the next decade of human infrastructure.
Yeah.
Google has the infrastructure, but they are bleeding the actual model builders.
And without the model builders.
Without the model builders, the infrastructure is just hot silicon.
But paying for those toll booth operators requires an unimaginable amount of capital, which brings us to the money flowing into this space globally. Because it turns out, retaining Nobel laureates is only half the expense. You also have to pay for the data.
Right. Let's follow the capital first, because the scale of investment happening right now is difficult to fully comprehend.
It really is.
MGX, which is Abu Dhabi's sovereign wealth fund, just created a $50 billion AI infrastructure fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they are doing something unprecedented.
What's that?
They are uniquely investing in all three major players simultaneously. OpenAI, xAI, and Anthropic. They plan to deploy $10 billion a year.
They are essentially buying a stake in the entire future, regardless of who wins the model war.
Exactly.
But if you think $50 billion is a lot, look at Japan. The Japanese government just announced a 370 trillion yen, that's roughly 2.3 trillion U.S. dollars investment plan over the next 14 years.
Yeah.
But they are pivoting hard away from chatbots.
And that is a brilliant strategic move, driven entirely by demographics. Japan has a rapidly aging population and a severe structural workforce shortage.
Right.
They aren't interested in a language model writing better corporate emails. They are pouring trillions into physical AI, the robotics needed to physically care for an aging population, run their factories, and literally keep their economy running when they simply don't have enough human workers.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. We have these oceans of money flowing into building the models and the robots, but then we have the IP bills coming due.
The copyright issue.
Yeah. For the last few years, the era of scraping the internet for free training data was the Wild West. As of this week, that era is officially dead. The BARTS versus Anthropic copyright settlement, the largest in U.S. history, at $1.5 billion, just finished its allocation phase.
This is a watershed moment for artificial intelligence and copyright law. Roughly 120,000 authors submitted claims. Mm-hmm. And the settlement is paying out roughly $3,000 per infringed work that was used without permission to train the Claude model.
It's exactly like a developer building a massive, gorgeous, luxury high-rise on someone else's land, knowing full well they are trespassing.
Right.
But just assuming they can pay the trespassing fine later, once the building is already generating rent, they took the data, trained the model, and now the bill is here.
And that $3,000 figure per work, that is now the absolute floor for AI training data licenses moving forward.
The baseline.
The baseline. The message this settlement sends to the entire industry is crystal clear. You must secure your training data legally and upfront.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you wait for a retroactive class action settlement, it is going to be exponentially more expensive.
Okay, so we've covered the hardware workarounds in China, the American software freezes, the mass exodus of elite talent, and the billion-dollar copyright bills.
A lot of ground.
A lot of ground. But all of this leads to the most important question for you, the listener. What are all these billions of dollars, elite talent, and legal battles actually deploying into the world right now?
To understand the output, we have to look at deployment and defense. Because the regulatory landscape is shifting just as fast as the code. We are exactly 37 days away from August 2nd, which is when Article 50 of the EU AI Act officially hits.
Transparency obligations. Meaning, if you are operating a chatbot in Europe, it must explicitly declare to the user that it is an AI.
Right.
And any deepfakes or AI-generated text must have machine-readable labels embedded in them so the network knows exactly what is human and what isn't.
Right. And while the regulators are demanding transparency, the AI models themselves are being deployed to secure the very networks we use to enforce those regulations.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
This week, OpenAI launched GPT 5.5 Cyber. This isn't a general purpose model. It is specifically trained for cybersecurity defense.
And the benchmark leaps on this thing are terrifyingly impressive. On the ExploitGym benchmark, the standard model had a 25.95% success rate.
Which is pretty standard.
Right. But GPT 5.5 Cyber jumped to 39.5%. It's already powering a massive open source initiative called Patch the Planet.
Yeah.
It's actively finding zero-day vulnerabilities in the Linux kernel. it found 8 pointer information leaks and 24 local privilege escalation exploits.
That's huge.
And just in plain English, a local privilege escalation exploit is a bug that lets a low-level guest user suddenly grant themselves the keys to the entire administrator castle. Finding 24 of those in the Linux kernel is a massive deal.
This raises an important question about workflow, though. The true breakthrough with the cyber model isn't just that it's slightly better at spotting these bugs.
Right.
It is automating the entire workflow. It finds the vulnerability in the code base. It reproduces the exploit in a controlled sandbox environment to prove it works. It writes the software patch and it tests the patch.
That's unbelievable.
It does all of this before a human engineer even knows there is a problem.
I have to ask you honestly. We are looking at GPT 5.5 Cyber fully automating the defense of our core operating systems.
Yeah.
Does handing over our foundational cybersecurity entirely to an AI make you feel more secure or less secure?
It's the ultimate catch-22 of the modern internet. Human engineers simply cannot read code fast enough to patch the sheer volume of vulnerabilities being discovered. The landscape is too vast.
That makes sense.
So we are delegating our defense to the only entity capable of processing the threat landscape at scale. It makes the network vastly more secure in the short term, but it introduces a chilling systemic reliance on the very technology it is guarding. We are entirely dependent on the machine to protect us from other machines.
Speaking of human developers, if you are a developer listening right now feeling overwhelmed by all of this, there is a massive quality of life update you need to know about that just dropped.
Yes, the new Claude Code.
Claude Code version 2.1.191 was released on June 25th, and it includes a new rewind feature.
This is a perfect example of a micro-level deployment that solves a massive macro-level headache.
Yeah.
Previously, if you cleared your context window to save compute power and lower your costs, that context was permanently gone.
Which is so frustrating.
It is. Now developers can hit rewind to recover that cleared context without having to start over. It's a small workflow tool, but it's already reducing CPU usage by about 37% for power users.
It's the little things that keep the builders sane while the industry burns billions around them.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? We started this deep dive looking at a Chinese supercomputer built purely out of domestic chips because of a U.S. export ban.
Yeah.
We watched the U.S. government freeze its own best model, Fable 5, accidentally pushing global developers toward those Chinese alternatives.
The paradox of protectionism.
Exactly. We saw Nobel laureates jump ship for pre-IPO equity that changes the math of wealth, and authors finally getting paid for the data that made all of this possible.
All of those threads funnel down to a singular reality. The sheer velocity of this industry is overpowering the traditional mechanisms we use to control it.
Right.
The capital is too vast, the talent is too concentrated, and the hardware demands are too intense for standard geopolitical boundaries or traditional lawsuits to hold.
It is a phenomenal time to be paying attention.
I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today.
Okay.
We spent this entire deep dive looking at human lawmakers writing letters, human lawyers arguing over copyrights, and human CEOs fighting to control AI.
Yeah.
But as we just saw with GPT 5.5 Cyber, automatically finding and patching vulnerabilities in the Linux kernel without human intervention, we are rapidly approaching a critical threshold. We are nearing the point where the AI is the entity actively maintaining and defending the very digital infrastructure we use to regulate it. The question moving forward isn't just who controls the AI. The real question is, what happens when the AI is the only thing fast enough to protect the humans?
And suddenly that skyscraper we talked about at the beginning isn't just building itself, it's writing its own permits and guarding its own doors.
No.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep asking questions, keep looking at the underlying mechanisms, and stay curious out there. We'll catch you next time.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.